Welcome to Podcast 83, a regular look at the news, stories, and trends related to Michigan's 83 counties, from Keweenaw to Monroe, Chippewa to Berrien. Brought to you by the Michigan Association of Counties. Here's your host, MAC Executive Director Stephen Curry.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Podcast 83, a podcast put on by the Michigan Association of Counties. Well, first of all, Happy New Year to everyone. This is our first podcast of 2020 as we move back into the budget cycle. As we just finished one budget cycle, we started all over again. And we also have a podcast rookie with us. Michael Ruddock is with us today.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. So we've got a new budget cycle. We've got a State of the State coming up with a budget presentation the week after. So we always at MAC try to put together some focal points that we'll be focusing on the next 12 months of an election year. So we'll get right into it. Dina, why don't you talk a little bit about what's always number one on the top of our mind at the beginning of every budget cycle?
Local government finance reform. Always, always, always talking about revenue sharing with the legislature. Uphill battle, always, but last year we saw a nice increase, which was pleasant, absolutely pleasant.
Wasn't that the sixth year in a row, though?
It's sixth year in a row, yes. We're still kind of struggling for to bring everybody back up, you know, to inflationary increases where they should be from when they came back onto the revenue sharing funding formula, but working on it, thinking it might be a little bit, you know, positive again this year, keeping our fingers crossed. Really, though, our priorities are, how do we secure it? How do we make sure that revenue sharing isn't like the first thing on the chopping block when revenues drop? I mean, we were hearing that fiscal year 2022 budget's going to be pretty tight and a lot of problems there. And so how do we ensure that revenue sharing isn't on the chopping block like it has been in years past? So we're going to continue to look at maybe we can make a revenue sharing trust fund. Other issues there, you know, what can we do for local options to raise revenue beyond millages? Is there a way maybe we can do some cost sharing among all units of local government to help with some of our mandated services, you know, and then always stable funding for mandated services. Always, always, always.
Next on the list, we'll move on to the opioid crisis, which of course has been talked about for the past year or so. So Megan, why don't you fill us in on what's going on there?
Yeah, definitely. Counties have really been focused on addressing the opioid crisis for, you know, as you said, Steve, past year, if not longer than that, everything from prevention and treatment, but also how it's affecting our county jails, our prosecutor's offices, medical examiner's offices, and so on. So we've, you know, seen statewide lawsuits, our counties and other local governments, federal court over this. And we've seen some traction on these cases. And I think, you know, one of the big things we want to focus on is ensuring that money is getting to the places where it's most needed. And that's really to the counties that are on the front lines in all of those areas. So we're going to really be watching that over the next few months. There's a lot of things moving on it at the state and federal level. But also, you know, some of the things that are coming out of the governor's office and the legislature with the opioid task force and town halls that are happening around the state. You know, expansion of medication-assisted treatment, which is basically where you have medication and counseling to treat addiction, and that's in jails and hospitals. And we really think that state investment could be used there, and so we really want to see and encourage the state to focus on that and implement that in the counties.
All right, great. Thanks for that update. And then moving back to Dina, something we worked on a lot last year, had a lot of momentum with, kind of fizzled out a little bit at the end of the year. Why don't you bring us up to speed on four-year county commissioner terms?
Okay, so we've been where there's identical bills that have been introduced in both the House and the Senate that extend county commissioner terms from 2 years to 4 years. We've seen a hearing in the Senate. We saw the House bills move out of House Elections Committee, and now they're sitting in the House Ways and Means Committee, waiting for some action there. The problem is they got hung up on whether or not county commissioners should be elected on a gubernatorial election cycle or a presidential election cycle. So we're kind of stuck. It's really, I think, a little bit more political than policy. The majority of legislators agree that county commissioner terms should be 4 years. All other countywide electeds are 4 years. Township offices are 4 years long. So I don't think that there's really an objection to the policy. It's just, when does that election happen? The MAC board took a look at this and discussed it at our last board meeting, and they came to the conclusion that they don't care. You know, we would support whether it's on a gubernatorial election cycle or a presidential election cycle. We just want to see it get done. So we'll continue to push through that this year.
Yeah, that's something I hear from our county commissioners across the state, too, when traveling around, is that no one really has a preference when you're a county commissioner. And I think our stat statistics show that. It doesn't really matter when the county commission is up for a re-election. It doesn't have that much effect on what happens to that board.
They're elected on both gubernatorial and presidential now. So
they
don't care.
All right, another hot topic from last year was the Trial Court Funding Commission recommendations. Of course, those recommendations came out in September. I don't think we've seen any legislation introduced yet, but there are some issues that we need to definitely address this year. So, Megan, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we'll be working on?
Yeah, absolutely. This one is a big deal because it has a date of October 2020 where the statute ends, allowing reasonable court costs to be assessed to the criminal defendants. And we were awaiting some rulings at the Supreme Court level. We were also waiting on those Trial Court Funding Commission recommendations, which we very much largely support. But we know that that sunset's coming up and we really need some action on that. So we've had discussions with the legislature, particularly the House side, who's interested in taking a look at the recommendations and also is aware that that sunset is looming. So, you know, we have some folks very interested in, and I do hope to see some bills get introduced here very shortly. You know, and please stay tuned. We're going to be asking for engagement from the members to make sure that we're getting this done quickly. As you mentioned very early on, Steve, this is an election year, so timing's going to be really critical. So please stay tuned. And then, you know, I think the legislature doesn't like to just extend sunsets without seeing some long-term solutions in place. So those recommendations are critical, and we want to make sure that we start moving on that. But that sunset's the number one priority.
Yeah, that's going to be key, is getting that sunset extended and showing some progress maybe towards getting some of those recommendations done. So hopefully we'll get some movement on that.
How likely do you think that's going to be to get it done? I mean,
which part? The recommendations?
No, the sunset.
Well, if not, then, you know, we're in jeopardy of hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's pretty critical. And, you know, I would emphasize that it's not only the counties that are in jeopardy, but also, you know, the state that gets parts of those local remitted dollars that helps fund the court system as well in other areas. So, you know, I think we have huge advocates and especially folks like Representative Leitner out of Jackson County who completely understand this issue. She engages with her county a lot, is going to be a good voice for us in the legislature.
Great. Great.
All right. Great. And moving on to some environmental issues, especially some stuff that affected us the end of last year with some of these rising water levels. We got some PFAS issues and, of course, infrastructure outside of roads. So, Michael, why don't you bring us up to speed on some of those issues that we'll be focusing on in 2020?
Absolutely. Well, you can't talk priorities in Michigan without talking about water or infrastructure. If you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you've heard about shoreline erosion and PFAS. On shorelines throughout Michigan, in coastal communities, you've seen tremendous amounts of damage because of record high water levels in the Great Lakes, high water tables. It's causing a lot of damage, erosion. You're seeing damage to roads, seawalls, public ports, docks, sewer systems, and more. And of course, the impact to private property is tremendous as well. Homes have fallen into lakes across the state, and those impacts are devastating. We've seen the departmental response from Eagle be to increase funding a little bit to help provide overtime to certain employees so they can expedite permits for things like seawalling. So we definitely encourage Eagle to continue to lead this conversation. In the legislature, Representative Aller, who chairs the Appropriations Committee for Natural Resources, is holding a hearing on Thursday where they'll talk about erosion along the Great Lakes, projections and work that's being done to performed to address this issue. So we're going to keep those conversations moving and make sure that we have help from the state to kind of offset some of these tremendous damages. PFAS, as always, for the last few years has been a huge issue. The state's response really in the last year or two has been surrounding drinking water with the Michigan PFAS Action Response Team creating regulations around safe levels of seven different PFAS chemicals. Counties are always going to have a stake when you're talking about PFAS. You have, you know, chemicals that have been found in county parks, of course, at airports, in some county-owned landfills as well. So we want to make sure that we have a coordinated effort. We also need to make sure that our local health departments, which do a lot of the outreach and educational awareness in the communities are well funded, because this is only going to continue to increase. The price tag is only going to keep getting bigger. Counties need to be involved every step of the way. And then when you talk about infrastructure, you know, looking at things like making sure that we have proper funding for combined sewers, and then the perennial issue of septic systems, which can cause a lot of terrible situations when you have leaching from septic systems that can get into groundwater and surface water. Every legislative cycle, somebody puts together an effort to do a statewide sanitary code. Our position, of course, is going to continue to be that we need county involvement throughout that entire process, and that if a county chooses to have stricter rules regarding their septic ordinances or rules and regulations, those need to be upheld as well to make sure that they were keeping local control at the county level.
Well, and I think it's important to note, too, as we see these rising water levels, we're not just talking about Lake Michigan, Lake Huron, Lake Erie. We're talking inland lakes as well, which can, that water table can rise, which can affect septic systems and things like that. So that rising water level isn't just isolated to lakeshore communities. It's all throughout the state, and something I think we will be watching.
And rivers. Rivers are going to be a problem.
Right, right. So it's something definitely we'll be watching and continuing to look at. Great job, Michael, on your inaugural debut.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, good job.
<She's small. laughs>
You're listening to Podcast 83 with news, features, and services related to Michigan's 83 counties. Learn more about everything county governments do at micountymatters.org.
All right, back to Dina on something we've been, you know, working on fighting for years, and these are state decisions on local property tax exemptions. So, Dina, I think we started working on this a few years ago. We've taken a couple turns along the way, and I think we might get a little traction this year. So why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, we're working on it. It's always been a priority to, number one, stop the legislature from granting more and more property tax exemptions. It's pretty easy to give somebody else's money away, you know, make you look like a good guy, give a gift, and they have somebody else pay for it. And that's really been the pattern in the legislature for several years now. There are a couple of things that we're working very hard on, and that's the veterans property tax exemption. You know, if it's estimated anywhere between $20 million and $40 million across the state that local units of government have lost since the disabled property taxes exemption went through. And we're not looking to take any benefits away. We are not looking to take any benefits away from disabled veterans. What we are trying to do is get the state treasury to actually reimburse local units of government for their losses. I mean, we all know counties provide lots of veteran services. And with, you know, shrinking property tax revenue, it makes it even harder to do. So really, it is incumbent upon the state to actually pay for some of the policy decisions that they're making. And again, want to reiterate, not looking to make it more difficult for veterans to get the property tax exemption, nor are we looking to change it. We just want the state to reimburse local units for it. Some other things we're looking at, we're going to look a little bit about at charitable exemptions and what we can do to sort of curb that or clarify what's happening with charitable exemptions. And then again, always on the defense when the legislature is looking at more personal property tax exemptions out there. So I'm going to focus on that quite a bit this year.
Well, I think when you're looking at that veterans property tax exemption change and the potential legislation or when the legislation is going to be introduced, there's a veteran who's going to be one of the bill sponsors potentially, right?
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, we're working on that.
We're working on it.
All right. Moving back to Megan, of course, mental health is always a hot topic with us. Some changes in the budget process last year with the pilot programs that were going on with regards to the 298 pilots. So they kind of starting back over all over again. So Megan, why don't you tell us what, you know, the director's kind of come out and said. I know he's testified in committee a couple times mm-hmm. since that change. So why don't you bring us up to speed there?
Yeah, absolutely. In mid-December, Director Gordon did present before the House and Senate budget subcommittees for Health and Human Services and started their overview and new direction to integrate physical and mental health. And in particular, they came up with this new concept of SIPs, specialty integrated plans. And there needs to be some more design around that. But basically, it'd be a group of community mental health agencies coming together to contract with individual insurance plans and other providers. So general concept at this point, but they have been holding statewide forums and discussions to get some community feedback and engagement in January and through early February, and then really trying to meet with the community mental health associations as well as the health plans to try to figure out this new design and new approach. We also have them joining us, and them being the Department of Health and Human Services, at the end of the month with our MAC, Health and Human Services Committee. So we look forward to that discussion and learning a little bit more of their proposal. But I think, you know, it's critical that our members have advocated for continuation of the public mental health system that we have and building on that design and ensuring that local governance structure to make sure that the money is getting to the people that are most vulnerable and need that. So that's kind of where we fall on it right now, but there's a lot left to be learned, and we're going to be, you know, part of that discussion and always, you know, advocating for increased funding, because we certainly know that there's a growing demand and need out there, and we need the state investment in that area.
Yeah, and help with jail costs, you know, things like that. You know, we obviously know that there is a significant need in our jail population to get some of those folks out of the jail system. And of course, we've got the Pew study that's been completed, been presented, and there's a report out there that everyone can look at, because I know they talk a lot about mental health there as well. So moving along, finally, last issue that Dina's going to bring us up to speed on is something that's been going on for many years. Still waiting for the tax tribunal's decision on the originating Menards versus City of Escanaba case. But there is legislation out there, right, Dina, that we've had for a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's been going on
there? The dark stores issue is one issue that's just, it's not going to go away until it actually gets fixed. Again, like Steve said, we're still waiting on the, you know, tax tribunal to rule on the Menards versus Escanaba case. But the legislature is also still interested in doing something. Again, Senator McBroom has bills that he introduced. And then we have Representative LaFave and Representative Brixey in the House who have introduced legislation to deal with the dark stores issue. And again, it's back to, you know, prohibiting the use of deed restrictions and value when determining value for a property, you know, using all three different appraisal methods to really come up with a good value for the property, and then justification as to why they kind of made the decisions that they did. So that's been introduced in both the House and the Senate. We've been struggling for years to get it moving, just years and years. And there are a lot of opponents to changing it. We have, you know, some big battles to face when we're dealing with this issue. I do think, though, logically, if we attack deed restrictions and prohibit the use of deed restrictions, I think we're going to gain a little bit more ground if we focus it on that and then continue after that. But that, again, it's never going to be off of our list until we actually fix it, for sure.
All right. Well, thank you. That obviously not a comprehensive list of everything we're working on, but some areas of focus this year for us in 2020. Just to highlight some dates, we got the State of the State the 29th, right?
Yep,
that'll be at like 7 o'clock, I think she usually does her speech. So we'll see what she has to, Governor Whitmer has to say about this upcoming year, what she'll be looking to focus on. Obviously, I think after not a lot of changes to road funding last year, I'm sure that that'll be a topic in there this year. Week after that, the 5th, we're looking at the governor's budget presentation, so we're right back into the budget again.
It's the 5th or the 6th?
The 6th, I think. 6th,
sorry.
This year,
okay,
yeah.
Well, apparently I'm not right. It's not unusual around here.
You should check your calendar.
So, and then finally, of course, we've got our MAC Legislative Conference coming up April 15th through 17th here in Lansing. A little bit of a change than previous years. It's going to be a Wednesday to Friday, starting on tax day. So hopefully we will be sending out information on that in the coming days. Some great breakouts I know we've got going, some plenary sessions, some good information is going to be shared there. So appreciate it. Anyone have anything they want to, you know, I guess the only thing we could really talk about sports-wise would be the Packers. The Lions are the Lions, and I guess and Michigan had a decent season, but lost their bowl game. Michigan State struggled a little bit. Basketball's going on.
That is not the topic of this podcast.
Does anyone want to talk weather? We missed the ice again here in Lansing.
I'm sorry. Why are you dragging this out? I have work to do.
I was just trying to make it a little fun. All right. Thank you again, and we'll talk to you after the Secretary or the State of the State address of the 29th. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Podcast 83, the go-to source for all information about Michigan's 83 counties.